welcome into this edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast for a Tuesday, the 15th day of September, 2020. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you're dry. If you're in the southeastern United States, your chance of being dry, not high. I mean, we've got Hurricane Sally coming in. Is it just me? Or has anybody else had the song Mustang Sally stuck in their head since they named this storm? If it's just me, I'll go seek counseling today, but I don't think it's just me. Oh, how are you? I hope you're well. Hope life is treating you well, that you and yours are safe and sound and healthy, and that you're looking forward to a good day or the remainder of the day, depending on when you listen to this podcast. If you're on Facebook Live with me this morning, greetings, salutations, and thank you for joining in for the fun. And if you're listening to the podcast, hey, thanks for being there. Thanks for subscribing. I appreciate it. Please share with more friends. We got to keep growing the fam. It is, it's going to be a damp day in our neighborhood. They're telling us we're not going to see much rain. We're on the outer edges of things, but I've been watching. It's gray. It's overcast. It's not looking good. And we had a power outage around our place last night in the middle of the night. And that usually happens, for a couple of reasons around here. And either storm winds or soil saturation. We've had so much rain pounding that the soil becomes soft, and pine trees here in the south, we have pine trees, and pine root systems are not all that deep. And so when the ground gets soft, those big old pine trees, if they're leaning in any way, they just say, "Up, oh, I'm out," and they fall on whatever happens to be in their way. And here in the south, we, most of us born and raised here, wise up very early. And when we move on to property, we buy a house. If it's got pine trees, one of the first things we do is, as soon as we can, is to cut them down, because they like to land on houses, and that gets very expensive. But that could be what happened, you know, a tree down on a power line or something. And I woke up about 1 a.m. just awake. And the reason, it was not because of that. It was something else entirely different. I mentioned yesterday about going to see a chiropractor. I did. Thanks to Miss Sandra. I am hunky and almost Dory at the same time. I'm feeling a whole lot better. She worked out the kinks in my back, and I'm a little sore in one place, but other than that, I'm in much better shape than I was yesterday. Because yesterday I was just like, I'm just having trouble breathing. You know, that I got everywhere you move, just something hurts, and that's all gone now. That's great. The other thing was I had to go see my ENT because I've got this low grade, sinus infection thing that's been, I know it's gross, I'm sorry, but this happens in about every 6 months or so. Well, not quite that often, depending, but I'll go see him a couple of times a year, and I usually only see him when I finally crossed that line that, oh, I gotta go. You know, I can't put this off anymore. It's getting worse. And so I did that yesterday. And one of the things they do, at least at my ENT's office, we've seen each other. He knows me, and he knows what goes, he knows what works for me. And so I end up getting a hefty antibiotic shot, and he gives me also a steroid injection, which kind of ramps your system up to keep you, to get everything working faster. So the fact that he's injected this stuff into your system and an accelerant, so to speak, into your system, everything works faster and you start feeling better sooner. And one of the side effects of the steroid shot is that, can you hear my fingers on the, is you get this way, you get edgy. And so I woke up at 1 a.m. just because I couldn't sleep. Just like my brain was spinning, thinking about all kinds of stuff. And I was kicking covers off because I was hot. That's another thing that happens, is you sweat. And I just decided to get up. And that's it. I'm done. I'm going to get up and go. I'm going to go read. I'm going to do something until I cross that line again where I feel like I can go back to sleep. And so that's what I did. I got up and I went to the living room, and I grabbed my iPad, and I read some stuff, and I watched some YouTube videos. And about 20 minutes in, about not even by 1:30, I heard that little chime that the that your Apple devices make when you plug them into charge, that little bell that rings. I heard it ring on my iPad. I've got my little Bluetooth earbuds in, and I'm listening to something on a podcast, and I notice, oh no, I have no power. The all the little lights across the room, the little LED lights on the TV and sound equipment across the room are all dim. I turn and look, and the Alexa thing is dim. It had flashed blue, and then it went black, and I said, oh, great, power's out. And the power was out for about 2 hours last night. I still don't know why, but at the end of that 2 hours, I was ready to go back to bed. And I really honestly would have gone back to bed sooner because I was ready, really ready. But without the CPAP, I just would have laid there and not been a happy camper. So, and the CPAP had to have the power. So there we have it. Anyway, that's my sob story from last night. And today, I don't know what it's going to be like today. We'll see. I really have some things outdoors I need to work on today. And it will be cooler, so that'll be good. But I don't know what the rain is going to be like. If we're going to have it off and on, if it's already too wet to do one of the things I need to do, that sort of thing. Anyway, I'll find out afterwards. Plus, I'm also doing some other podcast production, another Dawson Now episode releasing this evening, promoted tomorrow. And it's a good one. It's a really good one. I think you should, if you don't listen to Dawson Now, I suggest you do. What else do we have here? You know, if I can, I like to start, when I start getting into the news stories, I like to start with something absurd if I can. And this fits the bill. And of course, it comes from the capital of absurdity in the United States of America. No, not Washington, D.C. San Francisco, California. San Francisco may become the first major American city to allow 16 and 17-year-olds to vote in local elections, with residents deciding on the measure in November. This is according to a report from NBC News on Sunday. Activists are confident this is going to pass after a similar measure 4 years ago fell just short with 48% support. Crystal Chan, an organizer for Vote 16SF, who worked to get the measure on the ballot, says, "I really think that Vote 16 will help youth of color in San Francisco establish the habit of voting at an earlier age and really provide them with the support and the resources that they need to continue building on that habit as they grow older." The campaign manager of Vote 16SF, Brandon Klugman, adds that, quote, "Research is clear on this, that voting is a habit, and 16 is a better time than 18 to establish that habit." Some smaller cities already allow citizens as young as 16 to vote in local elections, such as Tacoma Park, Maryland. Officials there say they've seen positive results, such as bolstered youth engagement and higher turnout, such as since approving the measure 7 years ago. Although the idea hasn't been pushed as hard at the federal level, the movement does have mainstream support, including from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. She represents San Francisco. She stressed, she says, "I think it's really important to capture kids when they're in high school, when they're interested in all of this, when they're learning about government, to be able to vote." Those opposed to the motion say that 16-year-olds aren't mature or informed enough to vote, and that other age-related requirements in the United States are not at that age. And those people would be correct. San Francisco, although it is a local election measure, will no doubt push for this and approve it if it's presented nationally, as we can see by Nancy Pelosi's endorsement. Can I just encourage you to step in here with me? Step into the Wayback Machine, and I got the key from Mr. Peabody. Sherman's out doing errands. Let's just steal the Wayback Machine and go back. Not very far. sometime within the last 12 to 18 months, let's just go back. Back. Remember the news stories about teenagers eating Tide Pods? Have you spent any time around 16-year-olds? And please spare me. Don't say, well, I know 16-year-olds. They're very mature. Yes, so do I. But they're the exception. They are not the rule. Those 16-year-olds are exceptional young people and need to be encouraged to investigate the merits of conservatism, to learn about our Constitution. They need to be taught the history of our nation. All of them actually do. You see, I want to go back here to something that these people advocating this 16-year-old vote have all said. They want to form a habit early. They want to train these teenagers to go to the polls and to vote. A habit. They don't want to teach them about our Constitution. They don't want to teach them about the founding of our nation. They don't want them to know why we have a representative republic. They don't want them to know the difference between what we have in America and a democracy, because we don't have a democracy. Yeah, there is a democratic process. In our state-by-state elections, we go to vote. It's a democratic process. But our states are united as a union, as a republic. And it is designed that way for a specific purpose. It is not a state. It is a republic of states. We are the United States. And what these children are being taught in school, and I will use the term children because they are young adults, Mark, come on. Well, call them what you want to. You can call a toddler a young adult if you want to. It doesn't make any difference to me. They're still children. They don't have the life experience. They don't have the education. They don't have the brain development to make the decisions at this level of importance. They don't. Now, the 18-year-old vote was fought for. And I remember when it was passed. I remember my mother shaking her head and saying it was a bad idea. And me, being one who was going to benefit from that, thought, well, she's just being mean. That's wrong. But now, being years old, I understand exactly why she shook her head. Because I was an idiot at the age of 18. I was an idiot. I don't understand why anybody would have trusted me to vote for who was going to be the president. And it's worse today, because today our kids aren't being taught about American history in school anymore. They're not being taught about the founding of our country. They're not being taught why things operate the way they do. They're not being taught facts, the truth about our nation. They're being taught progressive opinion of our nation's history, not our nation's history. So they don't understand what they're really voting for. You add to that the constant barrage of propaganda coming through the education system now with Black Lives Matter and all of this other nonsense they're being taught. You add it all up and they're being programmed to vote a certain way. And that certain way would please Nancy Pelosi to no end. So yes, this is absurd. It is incredibly absurd. It's pandering. Trying to build a voting base starting at a younger age who will always be loyal to you. Why? Because you helped them establish a habit of voting Democrat. Everything is-
friends.
Release the hounds!
What was that? Oh my gosh. I think we're suffering from a severe case of operator malfunction. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. Good to have you along for this Tuesday, September 15th, 2020. Did you see where a mother and her two-year-old child were escorted off of a Southwest Airlines flight over the weekend because the child removed his mask to eat a snack? Yeah. Two-year-old child. Required to wear a mask on Southeast Airlines. Two and up. That's their rule. Mom, Jody Dagensky, she's 34, told USA Today she was flying from Fort Myers, Florida to Chicago with her son, Hayes, when the child took off his mask to eat some snacks before takeoff. The flight attendant told her that her son needed to have his mask on, she said, although he was eating. The plane, which had already left the gate, returned to the gate so that she and her son could be escorted off. She says this according to the report from USA Today. When the plane arrived back at the gate, her son had already put his mask back on, and Mom argued with the airline staff, who did not listen to her. The CDC says that children 2 years old or older should wear a mask, and Dagansky's son had just turned two weeks ago. She told USA Today, I know you have to draw the line, but let's be a little compassionate with everyone's individual circumstances. Airline personnel told her that some parents were using snacks as an excuse not to put masks on their children. But Mom said that's not what was going on with her. She says, I'm sure other parents are going through this. I want people to either do their homework before they choose to fly or find an airline that has more leniency. I just felt like I can't believe it happened. I was left scrambling. How the bleep am I going to get home? What if I didn't have the resources to buy a $600 ticket? Southwest spokesperson Ro Hawthorne says, if a customer is unable to wear a face covering for any reason, Southwest regrets that we are unable to transport the individual. In those cases, we will issue a full refund and hope to welcome the customer on board in the future, if public health guidance regarding face coverings change. Two years old. Is it becoming increasingly obvious to you, as it seems to be to me, that the people making the rules don't have kids? 2 years old. I would say if you can manage to keep a two-year-old in a face mask for the duration of a flight, angels with trumpets should surround the plane and herald the miracle. Because if you've ever had a two-year-old, you understand there's a reason they refer to that age as the terrible twos. And you understand why so many parents' first words whenever they hear any sound when they have a two-year-old, the first word they usually say is, no! Because with a two-year-old, they're exploring their boundaries. They're finding out how far they can push mom and dad. They're in this development stage where you've got to be in control and you've got to learn how your kid ticks in order to make that child line up with what has to happen. And when the CDC, when the CDC tells us everybody two and up should be wearing a mask, not only are they ignoring what's coming in from places around the world about wearing masks, not only are they ignoring the, although anecdotal, still medical evidence that in a lot of cases wearing masks might actually be worse for you, Not only are they ignoring the fact that we are on the downside of this whole curve, not only are they ignoring that the numbers of cases are dropping, the number of fatalities are dropping, not only are they ignoring the reality of life, they're ignoring the reality of what it's like to live with a two-year-old. Now, they make an exception for snacks. Okay. I don't see anything in the story about snack time being involved in this, although the child was eating a snack. They just jumped and said, yeah, the kid has to, you know, let's get you off the plane. They turned the plane around, took him off the plane in front of all those people. What an embarrassment. And what an embarrassing policy. What an embarrassing policy. That's the world we live in today. It's just loony. Absolutely loony. What else can I say?
What a bunch of crap.
Yep. Well, no big surprise. If you think the liberals were upset when Donald Trump defeated Hillary Clinton in 2016, wait till you see what happens this time when he beats Joe Biden. That's if he beats Joe Biden, according to The Atlantic. The Atlantic is a progressive publication. Let me translate that for you. The Atlantic is a regressive publication deeply disconnected from reality. They warned readers on Sunday that the Democrats might not be able to concede if President Trump wins the election, especially if he loses the popular vote again, but gets to remain in the White House. Shadi Hamid, a contributing writer for The Atlantic, wrote that he doesn't believe Trump is a fascist or a dictator in the making and doesn't consider America a failed state, but he does have one significant concern. Quote, I find myself truly worried about only one scenario, that Trump will win the re-election and Democrats and others on the left will be unwilling, even unable, to accept the result. He wrote that before warning that liberals could take to the streets if Trump wins. He adds, a loss by Joe Biden under these circumstances is the worst case, not because Trump will destroy America, he can't, but because it is the outcome most likely to undermine faith in democracy, resulting in more of the social unrest and street battles that cities, including Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, have seen in recent months. Many American cities have been overwhelmed with sometimes violent demonstrations since the Memorial Day death of George Floyd in police custody. Now, The Atlantic's contributing writer says Republicans should root for a Biden victory to avoid more chaos. He says, for this reason, strictly law and order Republicans who have responded in dismay to the scenes of rioting and looting have an interest in Biden winning, even if they could never bring themselves to vote for him. Wow. So we should want Joe Biden to win to stop what's happening in these cities. On so many levels, that's just insane. Does Joe have a magic button? Stop rioting? It's just like that button from The Office Place. That's easy. Does it say stop rioting? He hits the button and everybody stops rioting. Is that what Joe has? Or is this all coordinated? Yeah, I'm not voting for the button. I think it's the other option. That's crazy. Trump 2020 Deputy Communications Director Matt Walking saw the column. He wrote, they're not even hiding it anymore. If you don't let us, Democrats win, our rioters will burn down your cities. Hamid then wrote that if Democrats can't defeat Trump during a devastating pandemic and a massive economic contraction, we're on the downside of the pandemic, by the way, and the economy is exploding back. The party simply might not be able to compete with the GOP any longer. Democracy, after all, is supposed to self-correct after mistakes, particularly mistakes as egregious as electing Donald Trump, whose unfitness for the nation's highest office makes itself apparent with almost every passing day, he wrote. He's not biased at all. Hamid noted that liberals had enough trouble accepting the results of the 2016 election, and that many never really came to terms with it. He feels that the backlash will be much more significant if Trump wins again. And he goes on to spout the usual leftist nonsense about racism and the like. None of it's supported by fact. So, the Democrats might rise up. I hate to break it to him, but they already have risen up. They're paying people to rise up in cities across America, Democrat cities across America, and the mayors in those Democrat cities are refusing to do anything because it's all part of their plan to disrupt the country as much as possible in order to defeat Donald Trump. Back when he was elected, I said, back then we were still doing the radio show, and I said, they're not going to let up. They're going to keep making things miserable in America. This will not stop. Well, it might have taken a bit of a holiday, but it spun back up again. Because remember, the progressives said back then they were going to make the United States of America ungovernable as long as Donald Trump was the president. This is just an extension of that. They want people so sick and tired of all of the crap they're ladling out onto this country that they'll vote for someone besides Trump to stop it. Guess what? They're accomplishing the opposite. It's not working. Welcome back. Jumping into the second half of this edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Did you hear about Black Lives Matter last week shutting down a Trader Joe's? Yeah, they took a protest, a chapter, that is, of Black Lives Matter. Took the time to protest at a Trader Joe's about grocery stores. Yeah, a group of Black Lives Matters, a group of Black Lives Matter protesters in Seattle allegedly stormed a Trader Joe's last week to protest lack of access to grocery stores and to educate patrons on how capitalism exploits the working class. Holy crap. Excuse me. The group Morning March Seattle said in a post on Instagram showing protesters occupying the store and holding signs that say Black Lives Matter all day, every day, and defund, with an emoji of pigs. Of course, the Seattle police. They said if Ballard residents won't come to the protest, we'll bring the protest to them. We stopped by the local Trader Joe's this morning to share some education about lack of access to grocery stores in Black and Brown communities and the barriers that creates. How capitalism exploits the working class, and of course, gentrification. Yeah, you know, when you hear that word gentrification, you're talking to progressives or Marxists. According to its Instagram profile, this group advocates for abolishing police, which it portrayed using a pig emoji, and the redirecting of funds into Black communities. That's also known as wealth redistribution, something Barack Hussein Obama was all about. The store manager evidently felt so threatened by the demonstration that he, in turn, threatened to call the police and prevented patrons from entering the store while the protesters remained. If this critique of Trader Joe's sounds a lot like something that would be advanced by Marxist philosophers, that's because it is. The goal of Marxism, after all, is a society, they say, in which there is common ownership of the means of production and free access for all, in contrast to capitalistic society, which Marxists argue leads to the exploitation of the working class and restricts their access to goods and services. I have to stop right here. This story from The Blaze is good, but I've got to peel this one paragraph apart, this one sentence. The goal of Marxism, society in which there is common ownership, This is the promise of Marxism. It's not the goal. It's the promise of Marxism. Because the goal of Marxism is never achieved. It's never, ever achieved. So it cannot be a real goal. It's just a promise. Okay? Even Karl Marx never had a job. He lived off of a benefactor. He had somebody with family money who made sure he was fed and had a place to stay. The guy was never involved in the system. He just critiqued the system from the outside, living off of somebody else's wealth. If you didn't know that, go look it up. He was a freeloader. Oh, but he was a genius. No, he was a dope. Now, they say a capitalistic society leads to the exploitation of the working class and restricts their access to goods and services. I suggest these guys look at Venezuela, where they made the Marxist/socialist promise. Everybody said, hey, that sounds like a good idea. All these people getting rich off of oil and us just, living regular lives. That's not fair. So they voted in democratic socialism. They got to vote it in. In democratic socialism, the only time you get to vote for it is when it comes in. You can't get rid of it after that. It takes bullets and blood to get rid of socialism in most cases. And then, eventually, you lose your access to goods and services because Marxists don't understand how the real world operates. Marxists don't understand how money works. They just think money can be created out of thin air and everybody can share it. Margaret Thatcher once famously said, the problem with socialism, any Marxist ideology, is that eventually it runs out of what? Can you finish the quote? Eventually it runs out of other people's money. Yes, because it never generates its own. It relies on capitalism until capitalism says, we're not funding you anymore, and then it falls apart. And actually, more usually, they replace the people who understand how the real world of money works with people who are party loyalists and are completely ignorant of how the real world of money works, and they implement their own theories, their socialist ideas, and everything starts crumbling. Once again, see Venezuela. Well, this kind of rhetoric from them isn't surprising, because Black Lives Matter leaders have acknowledged in the past they are trained Marxists. What's ironic about Morning March Seattle's protest is that access seemed to be quite obviously available for the protesters. They were able to walk right into this Trader Joe's store. They just waltzed on in. But access was taken away from paying patrons who were temporarily barred from entry by the protesters' presence. Perhaps even more ironically, the only ones who have willfully restricted access to others in recent weeks are the Morning March protesters. They formed a blockade across Interstate 5 in Seattle earlier this month. These guys are blithering idiots. They've been brainwashed. They willfully believe something. They want something to be true, which is not true. Now, they talk about the situation with, let's go back up here. Let me see what it actually says, because I want to use the word. Okay, here we are. We stopped by the local Trader Joe's this morning to share some education about lack of access to grocery stores in Black and brown communities and the barriers that creates, how capitalism exploits the working class, and, of course, gentrification. All right. The lack of access to grocery stores in Black and brown communities. Why do you think that is? I'll give you a few seconds here. Mind if I'll hum a tune for my dog? Hey, babe. No, I won't do that. Listen, the reason there is a lack of access to grocery stores in Black and brown communities is because it's hard to keep the doors open with people stealing so much. Oh, Mark, that was a terrible thing to say. Yes, I know. The truth is hard. It is not pretty. It's hard to keep a grocery store open. I pass by, on a semi-regular basis, a little tiny neighborhood grocery store. Did you know those are still around? Yeah, some of them still are. I pass by a little a little grocery on that is off the main drag on a back route between one of the thrift stores my buddy Mike and I go to every Saturday. And on my way home, I pass by this little grocery. It's been there. It's been there for as long as I have. I think I was probably in elementary school the first time I saw it. I remember stopping there for something one day and my mom buying me a Coke at this grocery store. I've been in it a few times. Not now, because I hate to say this, but I don't feel safe where it is. But this little grocery store is still there. It's a little tiny concrete block building. Got a gas pump out front. Today we would call it a convenience store, but it's on the side of it. It's got the name of the business and it's labels itself as a grocery. Well, there are bars on the windows, bars on the doors, heavy locks, security cameras, lights. It stays in business. But it's had to set up a fortress of defense around itself in order to stay in business. Because of the attitude of some of the people in the community. And that's why there's a lack of access to grocery stores in black and brown communities. It's because of the level of crime in black and brown communities. You want grocery stores to come back? Stop robbing them blind. You want grocery stores to come back? Don't burn the black and brown owned stores down in your community when you get hacked off about something. You see, groups like Black Lives Matter Every Day won't think twice about burning down a grocery store in a black community if a black member, a criminal in their community, is shot by police. They won't even think twice about it. They'll burn it to the ground because they're hacked off. One of their own was shot by the cops. Doesn't matter what happened. It doesn't matter, like in the most recent incident in Pennsylvania, where the guy has been, he's a guy who, by the way, has stabbed and wounded other people with knives, is coming at a cop, is chasing a cop down the sidewalk, screaming at him and waving a huge kitchen knife. And the cop finally shoots to defend himself and to save his own life. And that guy screaming and yelling, waving a knife at the cops, a life-threatening situation. The cop shoots and the community goes insane. Those people would burn down the grocery stores in their protest. You think they're coming back? Maybe once. But not more than once. Go look at Baltimore. Go look at other cities where this kind of stuff has happened. And you'll see exactly why there is a lack of access to grocery stores in black and brown communities. You'll understand why Walmarts are not built in black and brown communities which have had troubles. You'll understand why the grocery store chains don't go into these places. And when they shut down, they don't come back. Other businesses I've noticed that this happens to, there's a along the same route, there is a corner convenience store, which has, I've lost count of the number of different things it's been. It doesn't stay long. Someone will open it up. It's been a convenience store. It's been a restaurant. It's been a fast food joint. It's been a handful of different things. The owners eventually give up and leave. They can only handle their windows being broken out so many times, graffiti on the walls, the problems that they have. That's why there's a lack of access to grocery and other types of businesses in black and brown communities. It's not white pressure. It's not racism. It's their own community. And when police seek to defend the community from the worst of the people there, the community rises up against the police. That's why. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for Tuesday, September 15th. You know, I've been telling you for a while that the Democrats are going to challenge the outcome of the election. They're going to tie everything up. They're going to do everything they can to overturn the will of the people, because unless the will of the people agrees with them, it's wrong. They pitched a fit in 2016 when Hillary didn't win, and they're preparing their people to pitch an exponentially larger fit this time. I've been telling you this because remember when I noted that the Biden campaign had hired 600 attorneys? I've been telling you this, and it's kind of one of those things you can probably say, yeah, yeah, right. But no, it's documented. It's out there. They have hired hundreds of attorneys, hundreds of them. Hillary Clinton publicly says recently in the last couple of weeks that Joe Biden should not concede in any way, shape, or form on election night. Shouldn't do it. And this is why I've been encouraging you lately to get off your good intentions and go vote. And if you can't be there to vote in person, then request an absentee ballot and deliver it in person to the place it needs to go, which is what my wife and I are doing. Our applications are laying on the kitchen table. We'll have them. Life happens. It's gotten in the way. We just haven't done it yet. But by the end of the week, they'll be back in the hands of those who need to have them. Our vote will be taken care of because we're not going to be here to vote on Election Day. Those two ways, overwhelming presence at the ballot box, at the voting places, the polling places, on Election Day, delivering electoral votes that night. Electoral college numbers have got to be there that night. And it has to be overwhelming in order to prevent the Democrats from attempting to steal the election and the nation. Now, from over at the federalistpapers.org, which, by the way, I've tried to access two or three times this morning, actually more than that, from my Safari web browser, and I keep getting kicked out. But I can go there from Firefox and other browsers, or Firefox. No, it also wouldn't do it on Google Chrome. I couldn't open it. But on Firefox, I can. I don't understand why. Two of the three browsers that I use won't open this page. Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden, the article says, is gearing up for a massive legal war over the results of the November election. This is what I've been telling you. The Biden campaign has tapped Dana Remus, its general counsel, and Bob Bauer, an Obama-era White House counsel, to lead a so-called special litigation unit of hundreds of lawyers, according to the New York Times. Does the name Perkins Coie ring a bell for you? The law firm Perkins Coie, which was a player in the production of a dossier of discredited claims about President Donald Trump, is a key part of the campaign machine assigned to attack rules about voting in order to serve the Biden campaign's interests, according to that report. So the same law firm who helped them craft the completely phony dossier that they use as a basis for impeachment and everything else, these same crooked lawyers are going to be coordinating things. Eric Holder. That's a name you should remember. He served as Attorney General under former President Barack Obama. His wingman, Eric Holder, will connect local groups with the wider Biden campaign effort. Community organizing. You see, that's what Eric Holder is doing nowadays. He's working through the Biden, through the Obama for America, that group, which they keep changing their name from time to time, and I keep getting, wow, I signed up for one email list, and now I'm on, I don't know how many I'm on, all of them Democrat. The Democrat Governors Association is my favorite because they keep asking me to be involved. We need leaders in your area. That would have been a hoot, by the way, if I'd said, sure. I'd rather not get my house burned down, though. Some said Biden's team is hardly trustworthy. Remus insisted this was all about a fair election. Yeah, that's what they always say. This is just about a fair election. Fair in their world is them winning, because they believe they should. Remus told the Times, "We can and will hold a free and fair election this fall and be able to trust the results." The president has said for months that the Democratic efforts to have a mass mail-in voting threatened to make this election a wash in fraud to a degree without parallel in past elections, when the only mail-in ballots in most states were absentee votes. He said in a June 23rd speech, "It's going to be fraud all over the place. This will be, in my opinion, the most corrupt election in the history of our country, and we cannot let this happen." He beat that drum again Saturday, saying on Twitter, quote, the unsolicited mail-in ballot scam is a major threat to our democracy, and the Democrats know it. Almost all recent elections using this system, even though much smaller and with far fewer ballots to count, have ended up being a disaster. Large numbers of missing ballots and fraud. Bauer claimed the president's warnings are part of the problem. He said a lot of what Trump and his allies would have us do is amplify their disaster scenarios. We're not going to get caught up in alarmist rhetoric they're using to scare voters. Of course they're not. They don't want you to think about all of the problems. Can I ask you two questions? Have you ever gotten your neighbor's mail? Yeah, you're nodding your head. You have. Has your neighbor ever gotten your mail? You're nodding again. You ever mailed something that didn't show up? I'm sorry, that's three questions. Something that never got there? Did something mailed to you never arrive? I'm sorry. It was four questions. The absentee ballot situation is a completely different scenario. You request it, you're in control. Having ballots pushed towards you, sometimes without your name on them, but the name of someone else who lived at your house before you bought it, that's a problem. Bauer also said Trump is attempting to tamper with voter turnout. He said the constant return to the issue is fraud. Of fraud is itself a voter suppression tool. I think that's a very interesting claim. Talking about mail fraud, voter fraud via mail, is a voter suppression tool. He's telling people at every appearance to go vote in person. He actually created a ruckus by saying, go vote in person, or vote by mail first, and then go vote in person. You'll get canceled out. One of those will get canceled out if everything is working. And that's the point, because in state after state, that's the system they have set up. If you've already voted, it'll show up. I know where I go to vote, they have an iPad, you log in, they put the information in, and it verifies that you're qualified to vote. Actually, they have a little scanner. You put your driver's license down, and it scans the little barcode thing on the back of it, at least here in Alabama, that's the way ours are. And it identifies you, and if you're clear to vote, you go vote. And if you're not, you don't. And if you think that's wrong, if there's something wrong, you can say, hey, can I get a provisional ballot? Because I have not voted. But if you voted by mail already, if you put in an absentee vote and you just want to be sure, you should come up as flagged as already voted in the system. And if you don't, then you should vote. That's the way the system's set up. It's a protection. He's encouraging people to vote. He's not telling people not to vote. He's not trying to suppress the vote. They are. Mandy Merritt, a spokesman for the Republican National Committee, said Democrats seek to turn our election into an out-of-control, all-mail-based election without the necessary protections in place against fraud. Republicans have always supported absentee voting with safeguards in place and want to make sure every valid vote is counted and our elections are free, fair, and transparent. What we oppose is a rushed and forcibly implemented nationwide vote-by-mail experiment that would eliminate those safeguards, invite fraud, and weaken the integrity of our elections. Republicans are battling Democratic efforts to add wiggle room into signature matching requirements for absentee voting, and let third parties deliver absentee votes, a practice known as ballot harvesting. There's a clear difference between what Democrats are pushing this cycle and a typical absentee ballot request process, she says. And she's right. They're pushing a process they can control. They and their operatives. And the Republicans are pushing a process which is proven. It works. It has the infrastructure to support it. It has the safeguards, and your vote is secured. That's the difference. And that's it for today. God bless. Have a good one. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.